Blog Talk Radio.
How's it going, everybody? Chris Block here, The Third Man In Radio, here on blogtalkradio.com/The Third Man In, here on this Monday night, NHL trade deadline day, February 28th, 2011. It is 5:30 here in Chicago. NHL trade deadline is in the books, and so may be my faith in Stan Bowman as a general manager, but we'll talk about that and many more things, including the Brent Seabrook contract extension, officially done. And to talk about that with us, Dieter Kurtenbach. How are you doing, Dieter?
I'm doing well, and my faith has been shattered far before yours. So, yeah, we can commiserate together.
And also, just had him down just a couple of weeks ago, as well as Dieter, back again from XM, Sirius XM Radio and HockeyIndependent.com, Al Simaglia. How you doing tonight, Al?
Doing fine. Nice to be with you.
Okay, so let's Blackhawks make one deal today. And after last night, Jordan Hendry goes down. We just learned about an hour ago. Torn ACL, out 6 months, Jordan Hendry, which is a horrible blow to him considering he's an unrestricted free agent this summer. But Blackhawks, not only were they in a need for a defenseman before yesterday, then they were desperate today. Stan Bowman goes out and makes one deal from the Ottawa Senators, defenseman Chris Campoli, an offensive-type defenseman, puck mover, not much of a defensive guy, not a big guy. Not a penalty killer, but a defenseman nonetheless. I'll start with you, Dieter. Ryan Peltunen in a second-round draft, definitely a second-round draft pick, probably
yeah.
The lowest. Whatever ends up being the lowest pick goes to Ottawa, and also Ryan Peltunen, and then a conditional pick, sixth or seventh round, based on whether Ottawa re-signs Peltunen. That's the deal.
Right.
Your first impressions, Dieter?
I didn't think it was a bad trade. The second-round pick's pretty high, but just given how the market was, it was pretty obvious to anyone who was keeping an eye on it that the prices of defensemen were going up big time. Everyone wants one. No one is really out of this yet. There's only a few selling teams, and so you had to expect that you were going to have to pay a premium for a defenseman. I don't know if Campoli is the best option for the Blackhawks, but he certainly was a defenseman and an able body, so it was good that they brought him in. Making one deal, I think, is the big critique I would have. The Blackhawks have prospects. They have more prospects than they can get on the roster. There's a bunch of them that I think you'll agree with me aren't going to be able to break through to this Blackhawks team in the near future. You can mortgage that a little bit and bring in somebody who does fill the need. Campoli doesn't fill a need other than the fact that he plays defenseman. So it was confusing to me that only one trade was made by Stan Bowman and that it was not a specific player of need. Not to say that Campoli is a good player, though, but it's certainly confusing. The entire afternoon I was waiting for another trade to come down, and it never did. And so this is the team we see from here on out, and Lord hopes Garnet Exelby can help the Chicago Blackhawks team survive in the playoffs if they make it.
I don't know about that. Al, we were talking a little bit before we came on the air. We got all night to talk about Garnet Exelby, but we're not going to do it right now. Now, we were talking a little bit before we went on the air, and I've made this kind of observation and that I believe that Stan Bowman, and I don't think we can really argue it with the, you know, quote-unquote, the Rockford shuffle with Jeremy Moore and Nick Leddy being sent down on off days. The way that Stan Bowman put this roster together, it was obvious to me, this is my observation, I don't know if you would disagree with it, that Stan Bowman general managed this team for this day. The trade deadline, that he was going to address his needs on this day. The Jordan Hendry injury definitely, as we talked about before the show, I mean, that hurt him. But what are your impressions? Did he improve his team on this day? And what do you think, how did he do?
I would have to echo some of Dieter's sentiments that he just brought forward. I mean, it's been a head-scratcher of a year in general. And, I mean, none of us are used to seeing a cup-winning team the season following the championship and this one being taken apart because of salary cap concerns. And it's just some oddities. I mean, when you look at Nick Boynton going on waivers, I mean, on the surface you say, well, he must have a deal. You know, I thought he had a deal done in the desk drawer. I mean, Why would you take that chance to save, you know, which is relatively a small amount of money because he gets claimed off of waivers and they shed a whole salary? But, I mean, it seemed to me that if you're going to do that, he's an insurance policy. I mean, you're, you know, a couple of injuries and you're down to Jason Cullimore and now Garnet Axelby. I would think that there would have been something else of more of a of significance done, so to speak. If not just Campoli and something else. But evidently, I mean, it's not easy to make a trade. No one's going to do the Hawks any favors. He sought after the one GM that was on a mandate that had to shed salary. It's an odd year because some of the clubs that really haven't improved from the previous season, Edmonton, the Islanders, those general managers, I mean, I'm a long way from either place, but they seem like they're very content and very comfortable to follow their script. And unless someone really knocked them over with an offer, like the Dustin Penner trade, they weren't going to do much. And, you know, Konopka, everyone in the world was talking about, he didn't move at all. Schmid, everyone was talking about that. He didn't go anyplace at all. So it's just a strange year, and I expected the Hawks to make at least one trade after Hendry got hurt. I thought maybe two, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about it. The one that was, I think, the name that after the initial rounds of Mark Stewart and Brent Sopel kind of made the rounds, and they moved to other places. Today it was Ladislav Schmid, the Edmonton Oilers. I want to point out, Steve Tambellini today in his press conference after everything went down, talked about not dealing Ladislav Schmid, and his quote was, "We don't have great depth there. We think a lot of Schmid. If we're going to trade him, it's got to be something that matches his talent or age." You know, the Blackhawks have prospects that I think that they like a lot, or at least aren't ready to give up on. You talk about Kyle Beach, Sean Lalonde. To me, with the Campoli deal, and my issue with it is, you know, there's some people that, you know, have pointed to Jordan Hendry gets hurt last night or on Sunday night in the game against Phoenix, and that creates a new need. Well, my argument there would be, okay, Stan Bowman said over the weekend that Nick Leddy's here to stay. He's not going anywhere. So that means he's in the lineup because you don't keep Nick Leddy around to be your seventh defenseman. So Jordan Hendry was just a placeholder for whomever they were intending on bringing in today. So the fact that Jordan Hendry got hurt doesn't mean anything to me, you know, because you could bring up even, you know, the guy that isn't mentioned today. You talk about Cullimore, Axelby, even though either guy could come up and be the guy that doesn't play in case, you know, unless there's an emergency. But Vishnevsky could play the Jordan Hendry role. I don't really like him as an NHL prospect, but he could be that guy. To me, you still needed a penalty killer. You needed a guy who wasn't afraid to stand in front of his own net and clear out a little space, which is one of the issues on the penalty kill. And you needed a guy that could extenuate the positives that Nick Leddy has if he's going to play every night. And to me, Chris Campoli doesn't do that. And are you going to continue to have this rotation where Duncan Keith is compensating for Nick Leddy's deficiencies? And you have these crazy pairings where Brian Campbell's with Chris Campoli, and Brian Campbell, one of your best offensive defensemen, is in a defensive role on the third defensive pairing. It makes no sense to me. The Blackhawks didn't go out and address their main need, you know, which was a physical guy who can be a penalty killer, who's a stay-at-home guy, so Nick Leddy didn't have to be hidden somewhere else. And you could go back to what won you a Stanley Cup, which is Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook, Hjalmarsson and Campbell together carrying the heavy load in spotting your third pair, which Quenneville, to his credit, is very good at, especially last season. So to me, it doesn't address a need. It's just bringing in the guy for the sake of bringing in a guy. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but to me, it was just I need to make a move, so I'm going to make a move.
Yeah, I got to agree with you on that block. It certainly seemed like Campoli didn't, as I said earlier, he didn't fill any of the needs for the Blackhawks, but the Blackhawks did need to make a move because this is a team. If everyone else is going to make a move, the Blackhawks are at the bottom. They needed to improve their team. And if we're talking about Hendry as a placeholder, which I agree with you on that point, then Campoli is an improvement from Hendry. Hendry's playing well, but really he hasn't solidified a roster spot. It's hard to say that Leddy has either, except for the fact that he has unbelievable promise. and you might as well see that out, and maybe he'll have a good game for you every now and again and show a, you know, a flash of brilliance. You know what you're getting with Jordan Hendry. So Campoli is an improvement upon that. But really, again, this is a treading water move. This team is marginally better, probably, you know, who knows how long it will take for Campoli to fit in. Team is marginally better than they were, you know, yesterday. And for a team that's going to have to fight, you know, fight their ass off for a playoff spot, that's dangerous territory. It really is. So, I just can't I can't give it a great passing grade. I can't rave about it, even though it is an improvement. And, you know, maybe I guess the alternative, I think what a lot of people would have, you know, might have wanted is for them to kind of go all in this year. I'm certainly not of that mentality. You know, you won the Stanley Cup last year. You don't have to repeat. You don't have to mortgage the future on, you know, a large quantity scale in order to bring in players, because you don't have the cap space to do it. You know, you don't need to shake the boat too much, but I just don't think that this is a move that that does anything to improve the Blackhawks' chances of making the playoffs, because it's just such a marginal difference, though it might be an upgrade.
Al, I wanted to ask you, one of the deals today that I think that puzzled me the most, and Dale Talon's made some puzzling moves this season, but he traded a quality second-pair defenseman in Brian Allen to the Carolina Hurricanes for Sergei Samsonov.
Yeah.
Do you, I mean...
There's no excuse there.
You can't tell me that that Victor Stahlberg wouldn't have brought Brian Allen to Chicago. I mean, you think anything... I mean, there wasn't any other deal on the table that could be made there?
Well,
No,
go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry,
That was my point earlier. I mean, there needed to be another shoe to drop here, and... you know, I understand the point about mortgaging the future. I understand all of that. But in the same respect, let me just throw this out there. If you're Steve Tambellini and I came to you and I said, I'll give you a second and a third round pick and some spare part, you name them, for Ladislav Smid, is he making that trade?
I don't think so. I really don't. From everything I was reading and all of the reports coming out of Edmonton, it seemed as if they held Smid in a very high regard, beyond, I think, what we held them under. I think they were looking for a player like Letty and a draft pick. I don't think that Kyle Beach was getting that done without a pretty high draft pick to go along with it. If you have to give up a second rounder and probably a pretty good fourth line center one day in, you know, to Ottawa for Campoli, what the hell are you going to have to give up for a player like Smid, who's going to, you know, who's been nothing but solid for Edmonton, in my opinion? I really think that the asking price was probably too high on that. And it goes along with something you were saying earlier. I mean, you look at what Garcinot was doing in New York. He could have moved a lot of players. He had the opportunity to, you have to imagine, because they were one of the only teams that could be considered a seller. And yet they didn't really make that many moves. And I think it's just because asking prices were too high. People are holding on to their players, and you really have to wow them. And that's what happened with Dustin Penner in L.A., as you pointed out earlier. But I can't imagine that the asking price for Smid was even remotely close to feasible for the Blackhawks.
Well, I would have traded Kyle Beach for Ladislav Smid.
As would I. I would have given up Beach as well.
I find it hard to believe that a GM would be able to pass up in Tambellini's position.
Yeah.
The 11th overall pick and the second rounder in this draft for a player like that.
I'm not
now, maybe
with
I'm
that
wrong.
At all.
Maybe
no.
I'm wrong. You know, maybe no. I'm wrong. But even if let's get away from the Schmidt thing. Although he allows you to take an extra year to look at Olsen and Lalonde and see which one of those two you want to keep. If you don't want to keep both of them, he helps sequence things out here. Or like you say, Brian Allen. Now, Dale Talon, what he did there was basically he cleaned house. So now he's $24 million approximately under the cap floor for next year. Okay? So let that sink in for a minute. All right? So now you see where he's at. And I don't know. I think there was a time to be aggressive here from the standpoint that, you know, I'm not saying you're going to win back-to-back Stanley Cups, but I think you could have won a couple of rounds in the playoffs. And where I think there was an underestimation here is that, you know, they looked at this team and they were hard-pressed, had to sign eight people for a total of less than $5 million. Let that one sink in for a minute. And
yeah.
And then they looked at the defense, and all you heard all summer was, our top four guys are going to be back. The problem was is that you got a John Scott that can't skate to be a defenseman. And don't let anyone tell you different. He was penciled in to be a defenseman. And then
he's playing defense tonight.
Well, that leaves you Nick Boynton, and that leaves you a Jason Cullimore. And what that did to a guy who's not going to want to miss the playoffs and not want to take a year off, Joel Quenneville then plays Duncan Keith 28 or 30 minutes, or 7 out of the first 10 games, 30 minutes. And, you know, getting back to your point originally, Chris, about did they get that much better? Well, I think they underutilized Hendry, but obviously I'm missing something because I've been saying that for a while. But having Leddy play, and Leddy is I think he's going to be a very good player because they're asking a hell of a lot of a kid one step out of high school to go in, and he shows a lot of composure. But he's physically, he's not there, and he could get pushed around. But playing him with Keith helps Nick Leddy. But it doesn't help Keith. I mean,
no.
all those pucks that Leddy can't turn and chase into corners or he's going to get muscled off, who has to come up and clean off the mess? And here's a guy that's played a ton of minutes, as has Seabrook, as has Campbell, really. Seabrook and Keith more so than anybody else the last couple of years. I mean, they can't take a second breath. So what's happened here is that those players are overused even last night again. 30 minutes, Duncan Keith.
Yeah.
Now, they might be able to go in on a shorthanded Minnesota team and beat them. You know, maybe tonight they're going to go all out again, and maybe Crawford plays a big game and they could win a game. But don't think these minutes don't catch up with him. And for me, this was the opportunity to get someone in there that could have maybe helped and spread out the minutes. The other night when they beat, I'm trying to remember who it was, Friday night's game, the minutes were spread out. And I think Keith played only 24, 25 minutes. It was the game before the last game. And when you see, he just looks like a different player when he could do that and not be asked to do so much. But now, I mean, you're really screwed in a lot of ways. I don't see where this is taking the pressure off anybody. Leddy played 23 minutes last night. Does Chris Campoli coming here, does that mean that he's going to go down and play Jordan Henry's 11 minutes? And if that 11 or 12 or 13 or 14 minutes, and if that happens, that once again puts a lot of burden on Keith, Seabrook, and Campbell.
I want to tie some loose ends together and then give the floor back to you guys because I want this hour to be about what you guys think. I can come back later and then we can talk. But Brian Allen, because I brought him up, one more year on his contract. He has a $2.9 million cap hit. So to suggest that he could have been a guy if you're moving out a contract, I mean, that would have fit under the Blackhawks cap with a little bit of movement. That could have worked. So that's not far-fetched to suggest that Brian Allen could have come in here. And then as well, since most of us believe that Nicholas Hjalmarsson is a goner in the offseason, the second the Blackhawks can trade him, with that 2.9, it's $600,000 less than what Hjalmarsson's making, and then Allen probably ends up either being Campbell's partner next year or a really good fifth defenseman. So that's just the point I was trying to make there. With Chris Campoli, he's in the final year of his deal, a $1.4 million cap hit. That's his salary. So, he's a nice defenseman, but he's more of what the Blackhawks already have. And he doesn't make you any tougher. He's a forward-moving defenseman who isn't anything moving backwards or in front of his own net, and that's a problem. To get to your point about Leddy, I think what you're going to look for tonight against Minnesota, what you're going to see certainly when Calgary comes to town on Wednesday, you're going to see the opposing teams firing that puck down on a dump-in around on Duncan Keith's side over to Nick Leddy and then bringing the Thunder with two forecheckers, a third man high, and forcing the Blackhawks to figure a way to get that puck out of their zone. And I guarantee you, if they bring that kind of forechecking at them, the Blackhawks are going to have a hard time with that pairing, and it'll be changed up very quickly. So just want to make those points there. I do want to bring this up, though, because we talk about improving the team. Mike Gillis today We brought in Chris Higgins from Florida, Max LaPerriere in a deal that he made with Anaheim. Just a little bit more grit, a little bit more depth, not giving up anybody on his roster. Stan Bowman, adamant this past week, and really for most of this last month, with the exception of trading Skilly, adamant that he didn't want to trade anybody off this roster. I ask you to. This team, Sunday night, excellent first period, and then there's these issues again where they have that one great period, and then they're merely hanging on the rest of the game. They win a game in a shootout. Why is it that this team, that we can see the deficiencies in, the softness, the fact that you have fourth liners that aren't fourth liners? Why is Stan Bowman so adamant? Mike Gillis today said, he's a first-place team. He said, we wanted to be careful that they're not moving anyone in their room because they're a first-place team. The Blackhawks, if they lose tonight in Minnesota, could not, they potentially are not a playoff team. Why is he so adamant? I give the floor to you guys now. Why is he so adamant about not moving players off his roster?
Well, he doesn't have a lot of room to work with to begin with. If he plays maybe he is adamant. Maybe it's all front. I can't tell you. I'm not in Stan Bowman's mind. And if I was, I think there would be some different decisions made. But I can play model GM all day. Maybe he isn't, but he doesn't have a lot of room to work. This team is top heavy, and it's not just top heavy in terms of talent and a lack of depth on the ice, which is apparent to anyone who watches them on a nightly basis. This team is top heavy in terms of salary. You look at a team like Vancouver. They're paying the Sedins, and then everyone else is 2.75 or below, and that's how they build their team, and that's how they have depth right now. And obviously, we'll see if that works out for them in the long run. But this Blackhawks team, it's changed so much. It went from the deepest team in the NHL to possibly the most top-heavy this side of Pittsburgh, and I would argue this team is more top-heavy than Pittsburgh. You got players, Kane and Taves at 6.3, Hossa at 5.275. You got Sharp at 3.9. You're paying Dave Bolin three and a third, and then you have scraps. You have scraps of players. I mean, Kopecky, I guess, could be considered a value at 1.2, but. And then you're dealing with Campbell at $7 million and Keith at $5 million. Next year you're going to be dealing with Seabrook at $5.8 million. This team has no room to work because their best players are locked into contracts that are, fair value or above fair value in a player's advantage. They don't have a lot of room to work. You give up, and there's just no middle ground. There's no players that can make the jump to the NHL right now and do it besides maybe a Jeremy Morin. So there's not really guys who are being roadblocked as of right now. There's not guys ready to come up. So what you don't have are real tradable bits that you can sell off to a team like the Islanders or Florida and say, this is a guy that's been roadblocked. Maybe Jack Skilly was the closest thing the Hawks had to that, and he got moved. This is a guy who's not going to be able to make it with our club because he won't be able to get the minutes that he needs. So you can have him. We'd like something back that will fill our needs. So maybe like a third, a second line or a third line center. And this is a kid with some upside. And that's how, that's how I think a good trade would have to work at the deadline. And that's what, Vancouver's willing to do that with draft picks and things like that. Hawks don't really have the draft picks to move, or they don't want to. And Bowman doesn't have the pieces in which he can really make a move that fills the needs. And it's inexplicable to me because I think that we're capable of, the way it's not our roster. I don't know. It's not our baby as much as maybe Stan Bowman is. Maybe he's really attached to these players. I can't really see why, but I think there's an attachment. I agree with your earlier point, Al. I would have given up Beach for Smith. There's no question in my mind. I don't know, I can't imagine that the Oilers wouldn't be thrilled to make that trade. That seemed like fair value to me, if not a little bit more. I think it falls on Stan Bowman in that regard. I think it falls on Stan Bowman not wanting to give it up.
Al, is Stan too attached to the players that he's acquired?
Can I back it up for a second?
Sure.
Yeah.
I think, not to disagree with you, Dieter, but I do have a different slant. Until the CBA gets reworked, and it's going to, and until you could trade money, and that will happen at some point, because even the teams that can't rub two nickels together will want to see that happen, because they'll want to they'll want to be able to acquire top-end players for 60% of the salary. If you go down rosters, you know, you mentioned Vancouver, you've got both Sedins at $6 million. You got Kessler at $5 million. You have Hamus at $4.5 million. You have Ballard at $4 million. You've got Luongo at $5 million.
Yeah, Luongo makes a lot, yeah.
Okay, now if you go down, and I'm just saying now, if you want to be a top team, you look at the Sharks. $7.5 million for Heatley, $7 million for Thornton, almost $7 million for Marlowe, over $6.5 million for Boyle, $4 million for Pavelski. That's the issue
not,
here
not
is
not to interrupt or anything, but you know, obviously that money is, you know, that's fair value for those players. The problem with the difference between
who do you think is getting paid too much money here?
Bolin, but that's really we can argue Campbell till the day we die. That's not the point. Is that he didn't go and spend the rest of the money that he has on players that actually fill a role. He doesn't go out and spend money on fourth liners. He spends it on, you know, a Frolik, who I don't know where he fits in on this team.
Well,
and
yeah,
we
agree. We agree there on what he's doing. But my point is not to rub your nose and disagree with you necessarily.
No, go ahead.
It's just a different way of looking at it because here's my point. The difference between where the Hawks are at and everybody else is no other Stanley Cup or first division team has eight players that I know of that made $600,000 and less. Skilly
right.
was no okay. Now therein lies your point. There's no one to trade.
Yeah.
Okay. So now was that an anomaly just because of the bonuses and signing the big three last year and being over the top? Yeah, in a lot of respects it was. And they didn't do that good of a job of spending their money wisely on some of those. You can't afford to throw away $500,000 on John Scott. You can't afford to have a Nick Boynton if you're not going to use him for the entire year. So he had nothing to trade, number one. Number two, I think you guys have pointed it out in your blogs, and Chris has certainly pointed it out. Most of the Rockford IceHogs are European hockey players or professional AHL players.
Mm-hmm.
And these scouts that go there game in and game out, they figure that out pretty quickly. So there was no one there that he wanted to trade that was worth anything to anybody else. So he was roadblocked there. Now the question is that I have is, unless he's thinking about, and he may very well be thinking along these lines, we will find out in a few months, unless he's planning on doing something huge at the draft, he's got 3 seconds and 2 third round picks. 5 picks in the second and third round cumulative.
Yeah.
So unless he's thinking about being able to somehow package those up for something that he really needs and maybe trade one of the core guys, or maybe he sniffs around for something else that's going on, it didn't make sense for me for him to keep all of those, basically, or 4 of the 5. Also, he got rid of Jack Skilly because Jack Skilly wasn't going to be here next year. He found the one guy, the one general manager, that valued Skilly more than anybody else, so he makes the trade. No problem with that thinking. Why do you get a wing that's supposed to be a center that's not a center when he gets here?
Right.
What purpose? How did that improve us? Because to me, the whole screwed-up mess here is those bottom six forwards, because you can't make a third line out of that. It's very difficult. And by that puts Bolin into a position where he has a problem. That puts Hossa with players that he can't seem to mesh with. Everybody, there's too many players up a slot here, and that's the problem. And by trading Jack Skilly for Frolik, you did nothing to accomplish it. I thought it was a great trade when I first heard it, because I thought for sure now they're going to have a second-line center. You keep that Bickle and Brower or whoever you want to put in that third line with Bolin, and now we go into the playoffs and we could put 3 lines out there. But instead, we're top-heavy because the talent isn't there underneath, not because of salary so much. And that's where they're going to fall short if and when they do, because instead of using the bottom six forwards and the bottom two defensemen, the bottom pairing defensemen, to be able to have productive minutes out of those guys, they fall short here. And whenever there's a close game, you can almost set your watch by it. 10 minutes into the second period, that fourth line is getting used infrequently. And all that does is burden players more and more and more. And that's the situation we're in.
Al, and I want to bring this up because the three of us participated today in a live chat, live trade deadline chat at your site there, the site that you write for, HockeyIndependent.com. And this was actually brought up, and we've talked about this before, Al and Dieter, but I think you guys got in a conversation with the Second City Hockey guys. Is the answer then, when we're talking about depth and how to orchestrate these lines, is the answer, I don't care what Patrick Sharp wants to do, he's got to play on that second line? Put him with Patrick Kane, move Hossa up to the top line with Taves, and get Boland with some kind of a true checking line on the third, because my issue with the lines as they're constructed now is that you have Dave Boland with Marian Hossa on his right side, and Dave Boland is drawing all the key checking assignments still, which means Marian Hossa, who's supposed to be the key to your secondary scoring, is drawing checking assignments. Is that the answer?
I would argue that it is. But apparently the Quenville Bowman, if Bowman does have any input on that, don't believe so. Patrick Sharp might not like playing center, but this team does not have a second-line center, and he's the closest thing they have to it. Him and Patrick Kane work very well in that on a center-wing combination. We know that Hossa and Taves work together well. And Dave Boland, and this is something that me and you, Block, have been, it's beating a dead horse beyond that. I mean, the horse is already, been eaten by maggots at this point. He's not a second-line center. He's an elite third-line center, but not a good second-line center. He can't win the draws. Patrick Sharp needs to be playing center. If he, and there's going to be moves in this offseason. Patrick Sharp, I think, is probably one of these guys. Going back to a little bit of what you said here, Al, if you have to move one of the core guys, I think that that's not the end of the world because the Blackhawks need to develop some depth here. And if you can move a Patrick Sharp for two or three NHL players that might not be – obviously not going to be Patrick Sharp level good, but if you can move them for two to three solid NHL players that can, give you minutes on third and fourth line, I think that's a positive thing. And I think that's something that Stan Bowman should, seriously look at in the offseason. But he's going to have to move to center. If he really doesn't like it, well, he can be the first guy out because they've given, they've given Boland his money. And really, I'm not sure. I would trade Boland beforehand, but they're weak at center, and so you have to move what you have in excess of, and they have an excess of wings, and especially in the minor leagues too. There's no centers coming up besides maybe Kruger. So, yeah, I think that putting the Patricks together and Sharp at center is the correct answer. And if he doesn't like it, maybe this relationship isn't working out as well as we thought it was. But there's. If this team is going to be successful, Jake Dowell cannot be a third-line center on this team.
Well, I don't know if it's so much that he doesn't like it, but, if you ask most players what they would rather play, most players are going to say wing. But
right.
I think, like I said in the beginning, it's a confusing year in a lot of respects. If you were going to try to force-feed Dave Boland into that second-line spot, if you were going to do that, why would you wait to game 50-something?
Yeah.
See, that's what I don't understand here, because it just – obviously, Hossa and him – the problem is, in my view, and you might be right, they were adamant about not chaining Sharp last year, and there was one bit of information that I did have that was accurate. They defined – they're seven core guys, and they weren't moving off that come hell or high water. And Sharp was one of those seven guys, in so much as that when Doug Wilson wrote the offer sheet on Homerson, most of the word around the NHL was that the Hawks were going to have to trade Sharp because most teams thought that they would keep Niemi, figure something out there because he's a cup-winning goalie, and that they would have to sacrifice Sharp. And as it turned out, they went a different route, in so much as to make sure that everyone knew, they announced it right before Sharp got married that he wasn't going anywhere. Bowman made a separate little press conference to say that, and which was kind of unusual to announce that something special like that in the middle of the summer that a player wasn't going to be traded. But to make the long and short of it is, he does a lot of things well here. He's a little bit older than everyone else. There's a lot of reasons why they would be reluctant to trade him. I think his value here is more maybe than it would be on the trade market. He scores a lot of power play goals, and I think people would use that against them if they tried to deal him, but they could get someone back. The player that I think and this may have to wait to the new CBA with the money and everything else coming off, but somehow if you could construct a trade, and I know that most people would disagree, if you could get rid of Marian Hossa and turn that into some sort of one or two assets that would be here and would be around the mid-20s, you know, be at that age or so, and you can move forward, it seems to me that would be the thing to do, because no matter how good of a player he is, he's very difficult. They haven't found one player to have any chemistry with him except Jonathan Toews, because Jonathan Toews goes north and south, and he doesn't really pass the puck that much either. So when Hossa gets the puck, he gets out of the way, he goes to the net, he could pick up rebounds, and he could get Hossa the puck at the right times in the right space. He's a smart enough player that he could adjust. But outside of that, Hossa is a difficult guy to play with, and to me, that's kind of the square peg in the round hole here, if you look at it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Al, getting back to, I just want to briefly, you think there's more to it, than not having the flexibility to move guys? Or, I mean, is Stan Bowman too married? You know, we know how much he's in love with Nick Leddy. Is he too married to some of his acquisitions, or does he just, maybe it's a bit of a stretch to say that he doesn't want to admit it a mistake, but is he married to these guys that he's brought in, as a rookie GM?
Well, I mean, who are you talking about beside Leddy, Chris? Because, I mean, he's really hasn't had his fingerprints on but one – I mean, his sole fingerprints, so to speak, on just one draft.
Well, I would start with Stallberg, a guy
Stallberg?
That doesn't seem to have a place on this team.
Well, I agree. I don't know what the trade appetite would be out there for Victor Stallberg. I mean, is Victor Stallberg – and the New York Islanders is a second, third line player. Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. So now the teams that are looking to improve, where is Victor Stahlberg going to be a top nine forward? Maybe he could have went to Calgary and been a top nine forward. They got Freddie Modine, but are they looking for that type of player? I mean, he's another player that's around, is a square peg in a round hole, not too much different than Skilly. The other bad thing here was out of the players that they got that were more affordable, a number of them were being put into roles that they never played before. I mean, for whatever reason, and I never did see it, maybe you did, Chris, I don't know, but I never thought of Skilly as a potential 30-goal scorer, but a lot of people must have. I didn't see that. You know, if you can't score in the AHL or at least show more than one flash of it when you went to college, to me you're not a 30-goal scorer. Troy Brower could be a 30-goal scorer possibly on a team. He's got the hands and the size to do it. Rene Bork scored 40-something goals in the AHL the year of the lockout when the talent in the AHL was probably never higher. He could be a scorer. But some of these guys that are scoring, 18, 17, 15, maybe 19 or 20 goals in the AHL, and then you want to, bring them up and say they're going to be, top six forwards in the NHL. I mean, especially when they're not physical, I don't get it. And they're missing the power forward here, and if you see the three key trades of this whole trade deadline mess that we went through were three power forwards, Stewart, Neal, and Penner. And that's what they don't have here. And it's not Michael Frolik. It's not Victor Stahlberg. I don't care how many checks he throws. And if he keeps taking penalties 200 feet from the opposition's net, like he did on last night, come the playoffs, if they make the playoffs, he's going to be scratched. Because they're not going to tolerate any of that BS when the playoffs start. So he's a player that's in the deep water, and he's being put in the wrong spot. And unfortunately, there's a number of guys like that. And we could go down the list and find them. All of a sudden, Ryan Johnson looks like he's got a second life, and it seems like that acquisition makes sense, although it sure took him a long time to get to the party, too. So there's a bunch of head-scratching stuff that's gone on here, plus they were up against it with having to get a lot of cheap and affordable help in here and a lot less experience. But everything's going to have to fall into place, and the stars are going to have to line up, because it looks like to me if they get in, they're going to be in one of the bottom two or three spots, which would mean that they're going to play the top three teams, and it should be interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you in terms of there's just the talent that they have on this team. It isn't bad talent. It just doesn't fit what they need. A guy like Stahlberg, I don't know if he could play top six anywhere. I would argue no, but he's not a player who fits on a fourth line. And you're trying to manufacture grit out of nothing. Jack Skilly, I don't know who put out the scouting reports that kid was going to be a player. But I think everyone just saw the draft pick where he was drafted and presumed that he was going to be, a high level NHL prospect. That wasn't the case. And he was never going to get that opportunity with the Blackhawks. Maybe the problem with this year and this deadline we expected more. I don't think it's wrong to expect more. But we really should have expected more in the offseason when the Blackhawks were up against it, as you put it. And what you really needed was a GM to do their best work, because really it was an unprecedented situation. You just won the Stanley Cup, and now you're going to have to turn over a significant portion of your roster. If you want to talk about a test to be a good GM, that's as good as it gets in terms of a test. And Stan Bowman failed. I can't say that he didn't fail, because what we're seeing with this team is that they're top heavy and that they have some very elite players. And I think he's done a good job in getting those players under contract, and that will bode well for the next GM when he comes around. And I'm thinking it's sooner rather than later. But he did not do a good enough job in actually putting together a team for this year that can contend. And maybe our expectations were too high going in. Maybe we were still a little drunk on the champagne after the Stanley Cup. Maybe he was. I don't know. But this team, when you're spending the $500,000 on John Scott, and that's the best that's the best you do in terms of trying to build some depth, you've totally screwed up. There's no logical way I can defend that. And so now I think maybe our expectations were just too high. What do we expect from Stan Bowman in this? I don't think this was a trading market where he could have made a very big splash given the pieces that he has to work with. And so maybe our expectations are they need to get in a position to contend in the playoffs and really make a run at this one. Maybe we should just be thinking this is a lost year, and they're not going to be able to do anything until next year because it's just too hard of a task to replace that many players in terms of depth. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe the expectations were too high.
Well, I think some of what you've been seeing already almost has the feel to it that it's auditions for next year.
Mm-hmm.
This Michael Frolik acquisition, they took a flyer. If he looks like he could fit in, now you might have a top six forward that you could sign back for $1.2 million. If not a top six, a top nine guy. That kind of has that feel. The acquisition today could kind of be thought of in the same way. I think when you look at things, they were priced, everything was priced to perfection, kind of like. It was, it was very difficult to go out and have to sign eight players for an average of less than $600,000 apiece. What went under the radar with, I think, a lot of us was, and I'll throw myself in there too, is that I thought they would have been able to manufacture a third and fourth line. And I wrote that in the beginning of the year because I felt that this was the year, when the Stanley Cup hangover, 2 years of going deep into the playoffs, this was the year that you had to spread out the minutes. They didn't address – that didn't work out properly. Third pairing defensively, which once again falls into the same thing, for 7-8 times in the first 10-11 games, 30 minutes for Duncan Keith, and they're bragging about it on TV. He was playing 29 minutes. It's not good. Sooner or later, I don't care what kind of freak of nature he is, that's going to catch up. So you look at all of that and you roll it into one, and then if you wanted to back up and take it two steps further back, maybe there was a little bit too much of, a little bit of smugness maybe, a little bit of, invincibility. The one player that they had that was key to this team, that to me they couldn't have made the playoffs without this year, that they had to sign back, that they had leverage over, was Nicklas Hjalmarsson.
Yeah.
They needed him. They had no replacement for him. But they had leverage. He wasn't arbitration eligible.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going out and saying, okay, we got to have him, day after that parade or 2 days after, let the champagne wear off, you got to get his agent in. And I don't know, I'm not saying that everything I hear is gospel, but it seems like more than less of what I heard in the summer turned out to be correct. They were, you know, gonna give him a little bit of a boost, like $1.3 million, $1.5 million. Kind of the same contract that they were going to Niemi with. Now, maybe if you would have said, you know, we really need this guy, and there might be a chance that one of these two, I mean, obviously I wasn't the only one thinking it, one of those two was going to get an offer sheet. So
right.
You have to pick your poison, right? So maybe if you would have went to him and said, okay, you're making $666,000 or whatever it was, we're going to sign you for $3.5 million on a two-year deal. I think if you'd have done it right away, you couldn't have done it during the season because of the tagging space and everything else that there wasn't any of. But as soon as you could have done that, if they would have went to him and tried to do that, it seems to me that you would have had a chance to avoid that offer sheet. Once that offer sheet came, that was an extra $2 million or so that you had to pay him. And then the house of cards just all came down after that. And, you know, it's easy to be an armchair quarterback and a backseat driver, but the one player that they seemed that they didn't have to worry about turns out to be really the last straw in the camel's back that really broke everything down here was paying him another $1.75 or $2 million than he would have been getting, because he had no choice. He was getting close to the minimum. If you doubled his salary or more, it was $1.5 million. If you signed him for 2 years for $3.5 million, he probably would have taken it. So,
yep.
You know what I mean? It's like there's no margin for error here. There wasn't, and that's the trouble.
I want to go back to something that Dieter brought up, because I think, you know, Dieter, you kind of said, and the question eventually is going to be for you, Al, but you kind of brought up the idea of maybe Stan Bowman will be replaced at some point. I think that my personal feeling is that it's going to take a lot, because Stan Bowman fits the model and is willing to buy into the structure that John McDonough has put into place. There'll never be a Brian Burke personality working underneath John McDonough. It just won't happen.
No.
Brian Burke, that's why Dale Tallon's not here. It's not because of the RFA fiasco. It's not because of anything else that it's painted as. It's because of Dale Tallon, and from what I understand, didn't want to sit in a meeting every morning and tell John McDonough what he was up to. So I want to, one of the things, Al, that you know is an aspect of this, and Blackhawks fans have this mentality that it's not Stan, and I disagree with it. I think it's very unfair that it's not Stan, that it's Scotty that's somehow pulling all the strings. I think that's very unfair, but Scotty Bowman's contract does run up at the end of July. You're kind of, you know, you're out around the team, you hear things, you got your finger on the pulse to a certain extent. You hearing anything about the future of Scotty Bowman?
Not in regards to him not being here. You know, I heard Dieter say that earlier, that he, you know, made a reference that Stan Bowman won't be here for very much longer. I think he said that. And I guess the reason I would disagree, one of the main reasons is because if you lose one, you lose the other. And, you know, I think they like that comfort. I think they like the fact that he's there in the background. The way they're layered structure-wise, it seems to work for now. And I think that, you know, basically you can't lose one without losing the other, unless Scotty Bowman just were to say, you know, I've had enough. You know, call me when you need something. But, I don't know exactly what he does on a day-to-day basis. If I had a guess, I would say pretty much whatever he wants to do. But, you know, if he got to the point and said, you know, I don't even want to report to you once a week or once every other week, I'm done. Well, you know, then Stan Bowman is here, and I think he would be here for a while unless things got real bad. And if not, maybe Al McIsaac or someone like that could move into that position. But I don't think Stan Bowman is in any jeopardy of losing his position in the on the flow chart.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to lose his job. I think that that's maybe more of a personal thing. Then again, if this team doesn't make the playoffs, maybe a head will roll, and I mean, I can only sprout my opinion so much, but I just don't see it. I don't see it. Everything that's happened since Stan Bowman has been in charge, I mean, there have been some good. I'll point to the Bickle deal. I thought the Bickle deal was a good deal. for a fourth or third liner. You know, maybe he's playing out of position. That's not uncommon for this Blackhawks team. I'm just not sold on Stan Bowman. And if John McDonough is the guy actually, you know, pulling the strings here, and if John McDonough is, you know, the ultimate decision maker, if he's the president and Bowman is just the Congress, well, you know, that's the nature of the beast. And, you know, you got to, I think then you replace the Congress. You got to be able to give better things to the president to sign off or veto. That's just how I see it. I'm just, this trading deadline, it, you know, as you pointed out at the beginning of the show, Block, this was kind of your maybe loss of faith moment. It was the off season for me. I just, you know, he was going to have to win me back in terms of what he did in the off season to improve the team. And he hasn't done that whatsoever. What he's done is he's wallowed and made half-hearted decisions, and you know, with the Letty situation, just, I would argue, a complete mishandling of that, and now you have him in the lineup on a nightly basis, and it's just, maybe it's an issue of transparency. Maybe, I mean, no, I don't think any team's going to come out and say, you know, we're not banking on the playoffs, we're trying to set ourselves up for next year and the year after that, and this year is probably going to be a blip, but I don't think that's the impression that people are getting. I think people are expecting this team to contend, and given the roster that Stan Bowman has put together for this year, I can't make a case for him that he's on the same wavelength as the fan population. So maybe there will be some sort of a mutiny of sorts, but this is the expectations of this team by those who pay the tickets and by those who follow them are not vibing with the day-to-day operations of the club in terms of putting it together. And, you know, Joel Quenneville has not been given a product that he can produce, you know, he can produce to the expectations of the fans. And I don't know who's wrong on this one, the fans or Bowman. I think it's certainly a bit of both, but he's got to be held accountable for some of the boneheaded decisions that have been made. And I don't know when it piles up to be too much.
I want to ask this because before we get into the Seabrook thing, you know, a week and a half ago, Paul Mara went to Montreal for a fifth-round pick. Second-round picks were being used to pick up players like Ian White and Chris Kelly from Ottawa. Today, one of the guys that was rumored to move, Marty Riesner, didn't move because the price for a lot of these players today went up significantly. Al, is that, you know, because a lot of people talked about would this be a boring deadline day, not a lot of movement because of the deals that have gone on. That could be one theory, or is my theory, which is kind of where I'm leading towards right now, is the NHL's talent pool so thin right now that NHL general managers are just scared to make a move?
Well, I think it's a couple of things, and that might have something to do with it. I think there's a real shortage of defensemen in a lot of respects because it takes so long to develop them, and you know the price has gone up considerably on defensemen, more so than every other position in the last few years. Dan Hamhuis had $4.5 million last year from Vancouver. I think that, and this goes back to my point about having to not, you can't slip at all. Everything has to be perfect. 4 or 5 weeks ago, even before the Frolik trade, which seems to me that was Bowman's one big shot, okay, that was the time to try to go and get a defenseman. But could they have done that? Could they have absorbed a $2 million player at that time with the cap shape they're in? I mean, they're shuffling Nick Letty back and forth like a yo-yo, which, you know, everyone says, yeah, well, they saved money. They saved $3,000. They saved this. They saved that. Yeah, and they also save Nick Letty from practicing with the team every time. Because every time that he goes down, not every time is he down when they don't practice. So, and he can't practice with the team when he's sent out. So they're you know, trying to rub nickels together and create dollars, so that's a problem too. I think that some of it has to do with the fact that these GMs are finally getting more used to and comfortable with the salary cap. I think you're seeing a lot of teams, as Dieter points out, with the top-heavy salaries. I think that everyone is more careful now with what they're doing, and I think it's going to be that way until the new CBA, which I think will be considerably different than this one.
Yeah, I have to agree. The Leddy situation was mismanaged. You could argue, if you want, I was, we disagreed on this block earlier. I said keep him up. You said let's get him down to Rockford, let him develop for another year. You can make do with the pieces. I'm not saying either of us were right. Sam Bowman couldn't make a damn decision. I'm not sure why he was being yo-yoed up and down. I can't see the benefit to that, given what the Hawks' salary cap situation was. You look at the deal; they put Boynton on waivers. Had Philadelphia eat that salary, it seemed like a great move at the time because that opens up a roster spot. You can trade draft picks for an NHL player. That seemed like a great move, and they didn't take advantage of that. It's just a lot of things that aren't adding up.
Yeah.
It's just not adding up to me.
Yeah, that Boynton deal, that almost seemed to me that they had a trade in the desk drawer.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, why would you do that? I mean, when you think about it, that's an insurance policy. The only reason to do it at that time is because you wanted to save the whole salary. I'm certain that a phone call came across and said, I mean, they saw the guy went down on Philadelphia. Who got hurt that night? The guy got hit into the end boards. Starts with a G. Yeah, that's right. Everyone sees that. I mean, he was gone. He's gone for the year. I mean, so that was kind of like a trade. Well, okay, now we could get rid of that extra whatever we're paying Nick Boynton for 25 games at $500,000 a year. I mean, $100,000 or so, $150,000, whatever it is. I mean, it's just odd. But there's just a number of things that have been odd here this year, and that whole John Scott thing, I mean, I don't want to beat on a dead horse. I took a lot of criticism because, you know, the Kool-Aid drinkers, it's not that bad. He only plays so many minutes a night. This was a year that you didn't need a fourth line to have a guy out there that was going to play five shifts a game. I mean, so in any event, there's been a lot of head-scratchers. The one positive, and I guess that leads to the disappointment in my view, if they don't make the playoffs or if they claw their way in to get into this eighth spot, you know, by their fingernails. The problem that I see is that when you take out the top three teams, there isn't that much difference. You know, everybody is, you know, puffing up Los Angeles now, but until they can win in the playoffs, they're a bunch of young, talented kids that, you know, in crunch time, they haven't really done it yet. Phoenix is the most underrated team in the NHL. So, you know, I'll give you the top four teams maybe, or one of those two teams to be thrown in the top four, but that's kind of stretching it. If you look at the Calgary, Minnesota, Dallas, Nashville, Anaheim, Columbus, and stop there even, the Hawks should be able to be better than those teams. But, you know, as it is, and that's the disappointment because it's almost like, I don't want to say there was a complacency, but, you know, I've watched this thing go from, you know, 4,000 people being here a night in a basically a cave, and I've watched it grow in a short period of time, and I go back to when it was real popular before, and they're going to sell out next year for the most part too. The problem will be next year at this time, if they're struggling to get into the playoffs again, or if they don't make it again, if they don't make it this year, then instead of seeing that 5 or 10% turnover in season tickets, you'll see more. And then instead of having the 21,000 an odd number that goes in every night, you know, it'll be down to 19,000. And then what happens is the air starts to go out of the balloon and you lose the press coverage because, you know, the Bulls seem like a legitimate team that didn't go and score a big free agent but seemed to have pieced together a nice team with a kid that could be really good for a number of years. So the Hawks go to back page news again. So, you know, it doesn't change. It doesn't take that long to change, and that's the danger, I guess. You know, it wasn't long ago, and I wrote about this not too long ago, it wasn't long ago that, you know, the talk in the NHL were the Ottawa Senators. And now this was the guy who had a gun to his head, who was trying to sell off players at all cost. And, you know, it wasn't too long ago they were in the Stanley Cup Finals and had everything dialed in. And then for whatever reasons, you know, infighting there, ownership, they change the coach becomes the GM, and a lot of things go downhill after that, and they make a few wrong decisions, and now they're a train wreck. So
yeah.
You don't want to even think about that, but it could change quickly.
Al, I wanted to jump in there because you made a really good point, I think, about the standings, and I want to talk about Leddy, and then I want you guys to tackle the Seabrook contract. But I know what the Blackhawks will say, and your point about the conference being top-heavy, and that, you know, Vancouver, for everything, you know, how much they've been pumped and how they're the Stanley Cup favorite, they only have, or the Blackhawks have only lost 8 more games than Vancouver has, and the Blackhawks haven't played their best hockey yet. Now, what the Blackhawks' best hockey is another story, but I know that that's their argument. And, you know, if the Blackhawks play Vancouver the first round or the second round, the Blackhawks still feel like they like that matchup, but that remains to be seen. So you are right. If the Blackhawks get the right matchup in the first round, it could be up for grabs from that point, and I think that's what they're kind of banking on, is that this isn't a year where there's a clear-cut favorite, kind of like the Blackhawks were last year. So that's one thing. I do want to bring up something about Leddy, and Dieter, you brought this up. And people argued with me today, you know, online and in that live chat about the second round pick. You know, you traded a second round pick for a guy who doesn't fill a need, and right. You know, people talk about Nick Leddy, and everybody wants to make out, you know, Nick Leddy. I've made my case about where he should be and how he should be brought along. My preferences, but people talk about Nick Leddy. His poise, yes, is remarkable. We don't know what he's going to look like in April. Let alone March or you know, June, if that comes to fruition. But all they talk about is poise. He doesn't kill penalties. He's not that great in his own zone. Under pressure, he turns his back to the forechecker, which is going to be a problem eventually.
Yeah.
And offensively, it's just not there. He doesn't make great passes, good reads at top speed, and he gets caught flat-footed sometimes. Chris Campoli was brought in. If Nick Leddy was so great offensively, they wouldn't need Chris Campoli.
Yeah.
So you bring in a guy that you didn't have a need for, in theory, and you probably will not have a use for moving forward for a second-round pick. Now, people say, oh, it's a low second-round pick, no big deal, blah.
Doesn't matter.
Dave Bolin, Corey Crawford, Brian Bickell, Duncan Keith, Ryan Johnson, Thomas Kopechi, guys on your roster right now that are second-round picks. Don't
right.
tell yep. me that a second-round pick is not a valuable pick.
That's right.
No, the Blackhawks' top prospect, second-round pick, Morin.
Yeah,
if you want to argue that, the most NHL-ready one. Yeah, second-round picks matter. And, it was too high of a premium for the player, given what they had to do. Maybe that's back against the wall. Who knows? Who knows with the Leddy situation? I can't even give. I don't even want to predict.
He's
anymore.
Very young.
He's
just very young, and he's not being used necessarily the right way. I mean, I don't know. He seems like he has some ability. They like him. He plays with his head up, and I think he could be a good player. But I mean, he's going to get worn out here, and he may be already getting worn out. I mean, but they were content to go into the year with John Scott, Nick Boynton, Jason Cullimore was off the radar. If anyone wants
right.
to tell you any different, but he played as well or better than the other two, and he did play as well or better than the other two, so he was
yeah.
here for a while. So I mean, but they were content to do that, you know, and that's a bit scary in itself. You know, they got lucky in some regard. It could have been worse. You know, like you say,
yeah.
they squeezed some of these young guys. I mean, Bickell signed a very favorable contract for the Blackhawks. I mean, he signed a very modest deal. And they went out with $500,000, and they got Fernando Pisani. Not that, you know, when I say his name, you're going to shake in your boots at the talent or anything, but he's a legitimate NHL player. And,
for $500,000, that was a deal. Yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, so if you look at it, you know, they got lucky in a couple of respects, but everything just had to fall into place here perfect. And I think that maybe underneath it all, they thought that they were going to be, it was going to be one of these years where they would get into the playoffs and they would be like a 4 seed, maybe a
yeah.
5 seed. But now it's going to be scratch and claw to get into that 7th or 8th spot maybe, and that's the problem. It's kind of like even the macro view of playing it out for a few weeks into having to crawl to get there and scratch to get to the 7th or 8th spot. Last night, another situation where, you know, you can't play for whatever reason. I know there's screenshots and this and that, but for whatever reason, you can't hold the lead going into the third period. So once again, Duncan Keith, 30 minutes. Now, maybe that won't matter tonight, but then again, maybe it will. And, you know, it's the whole year has been like that.
Yep.
Well, Duncan Keith's going to play 30 minutes tonight regardless because John Scott's on defense.
Yeah.
That's scary.
It is. It's a joke. It's a joke. I mean, there's just I look at it as straight-up comical.
Well, I'll tell you what, if he's not one of the five least talented players in the NHL, then I have no business ever talking to anybody about hockey ever again.
I'm with you on that. I mean, frankly, at a certain point, it's like, Block, I think you're a defenseman. You could be out there and doing something. You could shuffle your feet a little bit. I mean, geez.
I loved how I believe it was Adam Johns today. I caught him on his Twitter a little while ago. I guess they talked to Chris Campoli, and they asked him if he could kill penalties. And Chris Campoli said, well, I can kill penalties. It's like, well, I'm sure you could kill penalties. Dieter and I could stand in front of the net and block shots. You know,
we're big boys. I mean, that's the joke.
The question should have been, have you killed penalties?
Right.
You're 20, what, 26 now? What is he, 25 or 26? Have you killed penalties? They talked to him today, and Stan Bowman was given a little media presser then when I started this with you guys at 5:30. So some blurbs will be coming out of what he had to say about the whole deal too, I guess. But we'll see what happens tonight. I mean, if they win tonight, I got to start getting a little tingly then, you know, and give them the benefit of the doubt. But they sure do it the hard way, and it's too bad. It's too bad in a lot of ways, you know. I mean, I almost see the agony in Tave's face. You know, it's like you could just see it in his eye that, you know, he wants to win these games and not win them in shootouts. You know, he'd like to win a 3-1 game one night. And maybe tonight's the night. Minnesota's a little bit beat up, so we'll see what happens.
All right, last
week. Catcher Kane get angry. That's something.
Well, you know what? There's another guy, though, that, you know, dead spin, this spin, you spin, I spin. 53 points in 53 games. I mean, he gets a lot of power play time. He's not, you know, does he take a shift off from time to time? Yeah. But,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much more you could expect from a third-year player. I mean, he's never really had an off year yet. God forbid if he does.
Right.
A lot of players do. And, you know, people look at me when I say it, but, you know, I've heard it from players. He's the best perimeter player in the game, and he's 22. And you could say, well, yeah, but that's a perimeter player. But when you're the best at something, you're the best at it. You know, he could pass a puck through a needle, you know, he's through an eye of a needle. He's a very good player. Now, all the other stuff, will that come back to bite him in the ass if it's true or not?
Maybe.
If it's true, maybe. But for now, from what I see, you want to hang on to him.
I think he has
a pretty aloof attitude, and you're seeing him get pissed off during games because it shouldn't be this hard. And I mean, if Patrick Kane's getting pissed off and trying to light a fire under somebody's ass, well, geez, you know there's a problem. That was the only point. He's been great this year, and I mean, what a talent! And just the Blackhawks are very lucky to have him in many regards. But I expect fire from Jonathan Toews. I expect Patrick Kane to be whatever. But when you see, you know, Patrick Kane getting pissed off, you know there's a problem.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap up. You know, Al, you and I talked about this last time we were on. I've talked about it many times, but Brent Seabrook, it was made official. The Blackhawks did re-sign him. He didn't get traded to Edmonton for Magnus Piarvi. He's still here. He's under contract. They locked down a piece of the core. 5 years, a little bit under $30 million, a $5.8 million cap hit. I felt all along that the discussion was going to start at 5.5. Came in a little bit higher than that. We talked about the reasons why. Dieter, Al, talk sense to us about the Seabrook contract extension.
He's a great player. He got what he deserved. I mean, it's just more money for another top player. The Blackhawks, it's the double-edged sword. You have a lot of talent, you got to pay him at some point. And they're going to need to evaluate who is being overpaid. I don't know if this. I don't think you can get rid of Brian Campbell because I don't think that contract is movable. And he's been great for the Blackhawks this year. And it's hard to say. Not deserving of it, but that number's high, and I think everyone agrees with that. We already thought that this was the end of the Nicholas Jarmelson era in Chicago, but you're going to be looking at a few players in this offseason and wondering who's going to be going, because you know it's a pretty significant pay increase, and not that he doesn't deserve it, not that he isn't a $5.8 million defenseman, because you're not going to be capable of spreading it out Duncan Keith style over a period of time. But you know, this is just another GM test for Stan Bowman. And so here we go again.
I think my view was, you know, Seabrook was holding all the cards. I think that if he would have carried it out, the only thing he wouldn't have been in control of was where he was going to play, because one way or the other, he was going to get close to over $5 million, close to $6 million, and if it got really silly, maybe even more. If Shea Weber would have signed before him at, you know, $6.5 million per, his contract might have been up even higher. I think when you look at his profile, the Hawks don't have anyone like him. At 25, the only other defenseman in the game that's better than him is Shea Weber. And if you're going to build around two players like that on your blue line, I think you want him and Keith. And it wouldn't surprise me in years to come if instead of people saying Keith and Seabrook, they say Seabrook and Keith. I'm a pretty big fan of his. I think he does a lot of things well, and I think he's a smart guy. So I think that they did right to sign him, and now we'll just have to see how it works out. And maybe one other time when we talk, I think the next conversation and the next big thing for me that I think has to be decided here, I think we try to play the same style of game exactly almost for most of the year, or a lot of the years we did last year here, without the same type of horses. And, you know, when you talk about trading like a Campbell, if you were to trade him, the style of play has to change somewhat. Because as much as people want to say he gets paid too much money, which he does, but as far as, you know, when you look at it, they have three of the better tape-to-tape passers, you know, that can really do, you know, control the puck, skate with their head up, break out passes out of their own zone, into the neutral zone, and come and follow on the rush when you look at Keith Seabrook and Campbell. And if you didn't have all three, the style of play would have to change. So it's going to be an interesting summer, and maybe that's one of the reasons why Bowman wanted to hang on to a lot of picks. Maybe he's got something bigger in mind, but it almost seems like the trades that he made, you know, the Frolik deal and even the trade today, especially the Frolik trade, it almost seems like it's an audition for next year, and I don't really see the significance this year as much as I would have liked.
I also reading want to say, Stan's comment on just real quick. Reading Stan's comment on Campoli, he said he's not a rental player. So I think that's, you know, with the restricted free agency coming up, I think again it's probably another audition. So yeah, maybe our expectations are too high for this year, and that everyone's working on the 2011-2012 wavelength in the Blackhawks front office. I don't know,
and it's another
sure
player
like
that
it.
They could get. Another player that they could get. Sorry to interrupt you for. You
no,
know, what is $1.5 million or less, maybe?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
no, I,
exactly.
No, I'm not, you know, I mean, I'd love to be able to play hockey when I was 25 for $1.5 million. But, I mean, it seems like, you know, he kind of fits into that. And although, you know, they're not going to be in the greatest of shape cap-wise, if he has, which he should, let's say $9 million to sign nine players, that's a far cry from eight players for $600,000. So it's all going to be about picking, you know, the bottom of the roster the right way and really making some smart decisions, because you could afford to pay someone $2 million in that group now. So it's a different flavor. And, Dieter, to your point about Stan Bowman, this is the summer that you could really judge Stan Bowman, because now, you know, now he's got some money. You know, the handcuffs aren't on. He's got a lot of draft picks. Now we'll see what the master plan is for the next, you know, 2 or 3 years.
It's a scary thought, but I have to agree with you.
I want to point out, you know, you talked about it, it's okay. Last thing, and we'll wrap up. We got about 17 minutes to the top of the hour, and the Blackhawks are in Minnesota. You know, for all the fans that are all disgruntled over whether Seabrook should make 5.8 or 5 million or the delusion that think that he should be making below $5 million, which is ridiculous. I think this time next year, Brent Seabrook is going to be. I'm not saying he's going to win the North. I think he's going to be in that conversation. Just take this for what you will. But if you trade Brent Seabrook, let's just say hypothetically, you go out and you trade Brent Seabrook, you're not going to get a single player that's as good as him, and you're going to have to go out in free agency. You talked about Brian Campbell. No question Brian Campbell's overpaid, but it was a different time. You weren't a playoff team. You weren't the Chicago Blackhawks of now. You would be going out in unrestricted free agency this summer, and you'd be eyeing a guy who I like as a player, but not as much as Brent Seabrook, Kevin Bieksa, and you would overpay Kevin Bieksa. So
absolutely, there's nothing out there to compare with him. Number one, as you stated so well. Number two, there's no way you could have traded him for value without a contract.
Right.
Number three, you probably would not have gotten anything that would have been worth as much as the compensation. So they would have been. That's why Seabrook had all the cards. The only thing he couldn't control was where he was going. But if you look at the teams that would write an offer sheet, and people say, well, no one writes an offer sheet. No one wrote an offer sheet in the past as much for tie-in players. But if you could get a 25-year-old defenseman who isn't into his prime yet that you could get for 8 years at a high level and stretch it out and stretch the cap hit out, if you're a team drafting in the bottom five of the draft, you're making that deal. Take a look at the number 25s to 30s in the first and second round and over the last few years, and tell me which group of those you wouldn't trade for Brent Seabrook. And the team that would have been waiting in the wings if they could have manufactured the picks would have been his hometown team, who would have loved nothing better to hurt the Blackhawks, to give them an offer sheet, would have been the Vancouver Canucks. Because if you look at who they have, that they have a big hole on defense. They lose some big salaries, Bieksa, Salo, guys like that. So, I mean, it could have happened. It could have happened. And I think I agree with you, Chris, as far as you know, what's around the league. To me, and I think I said this on here before, and I don't want to beat a dead horse and repeat myself too often, but the games, Game 5 and Game 6 that Seabrook played, I haven't seen a Hawks defenseman play that well and be that dominating of a force, a physical presence, and all up and down the ice since Chris Chelios. And he was that good. And I think when I look at someone like that and see what he did after a long season, all those hard minutes, and was able to do that at that time of year under the highest pressure possible, those are kind of things that you can maybe think in your mind that in a number of years he could turn into a Chris Pronger type of player, and it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah,
all right,
I totally agree.
Thanks so much for joining us. This is great. About an hour and 15 minutes of discussion. We've got the Blackhawks and Minnesota Wild coming up here in about 12 minutes. Dieter, thanks as always. We'll have you on soon. Al Simaglia, Sirius XM Radio. Also check him out at hockeyindependent.com. Hopefully we'll be checking Dieter out somewhere pretty soon.
Yeah, good luck, Dieter, and thanks a lot, Chris.
All right, thanks, guys, for joining us. I will be back probably later in the week, probably Thursday night. But until then, thanks again, guys. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And enjoy the game. Good night, everybody.
And then I gave it all away. It's not the world that's heavy, it's just the things that you save. And I'm drifting, drifting away. Drifting, drifting, drifting along. I rid myself of worries and my worries were gone. I only run when I want to and I sleep like a dog. I'm drifting, drifting along. But never for long. I sometimes wonder if they know that I'm gone. I'm gone. drifting, drifting along, drifting.